The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The rhythm of Latin music is unmistakable. It's contagious. Across Latin America, generations have witnessed how Caribbean, Afro-Latino, Colombian, Mexican rhythms, among others, end up adding fun and a sensual tone on dance floors across the globe. Just think about it. In the 70s, the salsa label Fania moved from Puerto Rico to New York and brought with it a musical style that got everybody dancing. Artists like Willy Colón, Héctor Lavoe, Celia Cruz, Rubén Blades commercialized salsa, which today still plays in every corner of the U.S. and the world. In the 80s, Gloria Estefan blended salsa and pop, while also singing in English, reflecting the cultural amalgamation experienced by thousands in her generation, leaving Cuba and arriving in Miami. Selena did something similar, bringing Chicano culture to the mainstream with songs like Biribiri Bom Bom and Tecnocumbia. Then in the 90s and early 2000s, Shakira, Ricky Martin, J-Lo brought the boom boom to practically all dance floors around the world. It's undeniable. Being Latino is hella cool. But it hasn't been an easy road to pave. To get through the status quo of what it typically means to be a popular genre would require innovation, experimentation, and a small helping of right place, right time. Reggaeton had to pave its way in a similar manner. Initially, and still for many people, it was seen as a crude music genre, lacking depth and synthetically created. This is a topic we delved into deeply in our first season. If you haven't listened, go take a listen. And although we'll be talking a little bit about the beginnings of this trend, to understand the phenomenon that gives this episode its name, we won't go so in-depth. Reggaeton, little by little, made its way from the underground to become what it is today, a universal cultural force that's constantly evolving and showing no signs of slowing. But at what moment did reggaeton conquer the hearts and minds of the Anglo market? To the surprise of many, that answer came from the collaboration of two titans established in the world of Latin music and a pop star adored by hordes of teenagers and their mothers too around the world, who seduced everyone with a youth voice, a unique side cut, and who later became the poster boy of the bad boy image by covering his skin with tattoos. Can you guess who it is? Before we reveal it, let's try to decipher the steps that led us to that historical moment. To do so, let's go step by step. Despacito. My name is Lilia Luciano, and this is El Flow, Season 2, Episode 5, The Despacito Effect.
Reggaeton was very seminal in the history of Latin music.
She is Leila Cobo, Chief Content Officer for Latin Music and Spanish Content at Billboard.
It was a genre that was very Latin in the sense that it wasn't a copy of hip hop. It wasn't a copy of rap. It was a very identifiable rhythm, and it was youth oriented, and it traveled very well. It was a rhythm that was immediately recognizable, that the ear caught very quickly, and that could be adapted to many different kinds of music.
But in the mid-2000s, a plethora of artists began experimenting and creating truly unique sounds. Artists like Daddy Yankee, Wisin y Yandel, Don Omar, and Tego Calderon. That's when reggaeton began to sneak into the hearts of millions.
Reggaeton started as an underground movement, and let's be honest and blunt, I would say that many of the early works of reggaeton were not good. The production wasn't good. The sound, it doesn't sound good. But then they started to make it better. They started to record better. The sound started to get better. And then you had this raw material that was very good and very compelling and was already connecting with people. And I think that that's really the key of reggaeton.
It was a fresh, bold, and daring experiment. It brought a new, catchy, and fun rhythm to our speakers. And above all, it came with perreo. Everybody wanted to dance to it. But at first, some were reluctant to admit it.
You had this underground movement that in Puerto Rico was very successful locally. People were consuming it. People were gravitating toward it. People related to it. It was just finding the way to make the switch from I'm making music for my barrio to I'm making music for the world, which is what you need to do if you're going to be commercially successful, right? Otherwise, you'll just stay selling your empanadas in your barrio the rest of your life. And they're delicious, but no one else is going to buy them except the people on that block.
As Leila Cobo points out, in its infancy, you could compare reggaeton to a delicious empanada. Those in the barrio know they're delicious, but what about outside the culture?
Once you figure out how to do it correctly, so a lot of people like those empanadas and a lot of people want them and you can ship those empanadas everywhere else.
Once the formula for success was figured out, reggaeton grew out and became a force. Because as Leila believes, in Latin America, there was no genre in Spanish that appealed to the youth at the time. It was a youth disinterested in rock, tired of pop, and alienated by English language music.
The entire tropical part of Latin America, you know, Puerto Rico, Colombia to a degree, Panama, I don't think they were really listening to Latin rock, and there wasn't a major successful, massive Latin rock movement. I think what made reggaeton different is that reggaeton was a beat that was particular to Latin music. It was invented by Latins.
This uniquely Latino creation and expression was what was needed. And as we mentioned in the previous episodes, in that first wave of reggaeton, nothing was ever the same after Gasolina.
I think that Yankee and Gasolina were definitely the tipping point from a before and after.
As the genre grew, it infused itself with urban sounds that spoke to its fans, who began to listen to it from a young age, and differentiated itself from traditional pop music. But suddenly, in the 2010s, a second wave of reggaeton style came in. And similar to Gasolina in the decade prior, one song would change it all.
Luis Fonsi had had several huge hits as a balladeer. He had been working on the new album for quite some time, for over a year. And Despacito was simply a song for that album.
We'll be back with more after the break.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So,
How'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
In the previous segment, Leila Cobo gave us a brief insight into how reggaeton won over people's hearts and gained popularity in the charts. In what she calls a second wave of reggaeton, Despacito arrived. At that time, at the end of 2016 and beginning of 2017, pop was making a hard left towards the Caribbean, especially with dancehall. That euphoric Jamaican rhythm, previously adopted by pop artists that created hits such as Coco Jumbo by Mr. President, Informer by Snow, and Bombastic by Shaggy in the 90s. And remember, reggaeton owes a lot of its rhythm, style, and flow to dancehall, something we also went into detail about in our first season. Justin Bieber mixed dancehall with his pop style in his hit Sorry in 2015. Then came Drake with One Dance and Rihanna with Work in 2016. They were all revisiting Caribbean roots in pop. By no means, though, was this pure and hard dancehall, but it was still somewhat dancehall. With this prologue of Caribbean rhythms, dancehall seeping into pop, reggaeton was the obvious evolution for pop. And that's when Puerto Rican singer-songwriter Luis Fonsi came into the mix.
Day Eddie Cander went to his house and he said, listen, I have this little hook I wrote. They sat down and they started to riff on Despacito, and in a morning they had the song. He then sent it to his producers, which are Mauricio and Andres, Mauricio Rengifo and Andres Restrepo, Colombian duo of producers, and they listened to it and they said, no, Luis, this isn't a ballad. This is a reggaeton. Can't you hear it? Like, this is perfect as a reggaeton. And they put the reggaeton beat on. So now the song evolved from being a little cute up-tempo ballad to being an up-tempo ballad with a reggaeton beat, you know, so kind of a romantic reggaeton.
And then they invited the OG, the king of reggaeton, Ramon Luis Ayala Rodriguez, better known as Daddy Yankee.
Fonsi called Daddy Yankee and said, I have the song and I would love it if you could consider being on it and doing a reggaeton, you know, doing a rap section in the middle.
Though Daddy Yankee was not the first choice.
The first singer was Nicky Jam. Nicky Jam recorded a version of Despacito And after he recorded it, after it was done and everything, some time passed and he called and he said, no, I'm sorry, I can't be part of this because my album is coming out at the same time as yours. So I have to get off this song.
Can you imagine what the song would have been had it been Nicki Jam instead of Daddy Yankee on those verses? Would it be just as successful? Would it be the hit that we all love? You know what? Perhaps. It's hard to think, isn't it? The important thing is that Yankee did hop onto the track with Fonsi, and the song took off and scored high.
He sent the song to Yankee, and Yankee said, I love it, I'll do it. And he flew to Miami, went to the studio, and within hours, he recorded his part. He also added the pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, you know, that bridge, which actually is a very key element of the song. And then suddenly the song was a whole different song. It just seemed to get better with every iteration.
In every corner of Latin America, Despacito was playing. It was a fun and digestible reggaeton for the whole family. Even grandmothers loved it. Who would have thought that in just a few years, the genre widely considered too vulgar for most would become something so universally loved?
They put a lot behind it, and the song exploded. It exploded far more than they thought it would. And this song became a very, very quick hit here in the U.S., in Latin America, in Europe. But they thought, wow, if we could do a remix with a mainstream artist singing in English, this could really explode.
Once the song was at that point, a star came along to give it another spark to take it even further, to conquer the American market where it still hadn't established itself too deeply. A Canadian pretty boy arrived who had never done reggaeton. We asked Leila Cobo about how this collaboration came about. There are many myths, but she literally wrote the book on the chronicles of how it actually happened. And it went something like this.
So they were exploring that possibility when Justin Bieber went to Colombia to play a concert.
To give some context, Colombia has been in an ongoing armed conflict since the 1940s. It's complicated, and we're not going to delve too deeply into the topic, but it's one I have covered extensively. The important thing, though, now is that in 2017, the peace treaty between the government and the FARC guerrilla had been signed. Things had started to somewhat improve, and Justin Bieber performed a concert in Bogotá that was something millions in the country were thrilled and hopeful about.
He went to a club in Bogotá and they played Despacito. He heard it in that context. He called his manager, Scooter Brown, and he said, I'm in this club, I'm listening to this song, and I want to do a remix. I want to jump on this song. I'm here, I'm in Colombia, I want to do it like right now.
Scooter Braun was his manager at the time. You might remember him from his controversy with Taylor Swift when he bought the rights to all of her songs and she later had to re-record them. Well, that's a different story, but let's continue for now with the story of Despacito and Justin Bieber.
The following day, they flew down his vocal producer from New York. They hired a diction coach in Bogotá to teach Justin how to pronounce properly in Spanish. They booked a recording studio, and Justin Bieber, within 24 hours, was in a recording studio in Bogotá, recording his verses in English and Spanish of Despacito. This was genuinely done in a 48-hour time period.
The Despacito remix with Justin Bieber was released on April 17th, 2017. The chords of that acoustic guitar, intrinsically linked to the old Latin ballads of Luis Fonsi, precede a verse with the unmistakable voice of Bieber. Then Fonsi follows with a simple rhyme. Tú eres el imán, oh, tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. And then the chorus that everyone recognizes drops. Despacito. But this time, with the unmistakable voice of the Canadian pop star. Bieber's accent is unmistakable. He clearly doesn't speak Spanish. But that doesn't matter. It was a beautiful coincidence of life, one of those moments when the stars align and magic is made.
In this case, you had a song that wasn't a novelty song. You know, it was a song that really was primarily in Spanish, but it had a couple of lines in English by Justin Bieber. But they worked really hard. And what everyone realized is that the song was so good.
And Despacito, a song that had already gone so far without Bieber, went even further.
That language notwithstanding, people really were reacting to it. So this song started to climb the chart. Every week it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally it reached number one. And so at that point, Justin's management said, well, that's great. We reached number one. We did it. And then it stayed.
Justin Bieber was the most important artist in the world at the time. Yes, even more than Daddy Yankee, though it hurts to admit.
They never thought it was going to stay for 16 weeks. It stayed number one for 16 weeks, which at the time was a record. The only other song that had been so long in the charts was Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men.
They were all in disbelief, but the charts spoke for themselves. And we can all agree that moment was memorable. Despacito was everywhere, all the damn time.
Suddenly Despacito, in Spanish, was tying this record. And then the following week, it got dethroned. It was like just a monumental achievement. Getting to number one was already a monumental achievement. And then staying at number one for 16 weeks for a song in Spanish, it had never happened in the history of the chart. It hasn't happened in the history of the chart since.
16 weeks, that is 4 months, a third of a calendar year. The only song that had been there that long was One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men between 95 and 96. Only Macarena, the hit from 1996, compares to the success of Despacito on the charts. And might I mention, both in Spanish. When all was said and done, Taylor Swift's Look What You Made Me Do dethroned Despacito's 16-week dominance. It managed to tie One Sweet Day's 16-week record, and both were ultimately topped by Billie Eilish's Bad Guy, which at the time we record this episode holds the record with 19 weeks at number one on the Billboard chart. We'll be back with more after a short break.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Despacito didn't just reach the entire world. It changed how the world consumed musical content. A TikTok trend made millions of people from all continents join in dancing to a part of the song when Daddy Yankee raps, "Sabes que esa beba quiere de mi bam bam," which means, you know, she wants my bam bam. And we don't need to get into which part of the body moves when those two syllables are pronounced. Despacito is an easy word to repeat in Spanish, even for those who don't speak it. It was fun, although many had no idea what they were saying. And from Cuba to New York, all the way to Hong Kong, everyone was dancing to this infectious beat. Leila Cobo not only works at Billboard and was there reporting on the song's meteoric rise up the charts, but she also wrote a book titled The Despacito Formula, The Hits of Latin Music Told by Its Artists.
There were a couple of really important things before. The most important, in my opinion, was Enrique Iglesias Bailando was really the blueprint for Despacito. It just didn't have as much success, but it definitely was that kind of song. It was a mishmash of artists. You know, it was an Enrique song. They did Cuban stuff, and they recorded it with the reggaeton beat. That's how the reggaeton beat came into Bailando. Bailando was definitely the precursor to Despacito.
Clearly, there was a precedent set before Despacito's arrival. But when Despacito came, it changed everything. It won Song and Album of the Year at the 2017 Latin Grammys, and also won Latin Song of the Decade by Billboard.
It's interesting because Luis hasn't had another major hit since then. I gotta tell you, still plays everywhere. People still listen to it. They still look for it. It's surprising to me. It's been a while. It's going to be 7 years.
At the time, it was the most streamed song in Spotify's history. The video reached 3 billion views on YouTube, which made it the most viewed video in history at the time. And it didn't even include Bieber yet. Today, the video has over 8.32 billion views. It broke the record for the most viewed video. Until it was dethroned by none other than Baby Shark.
I think it opened the ears of the world to that beat. I think as a result, many artists started to incorporate reggaeton in their songs. I always give the example of Ed Sheeran and Shape of You. And you hear reggaeton now in many, many songs that aren't Latin songs.
For most, reggaeton stopped being a threat and became another facet of universal pop. Certainly, it encouraged many other pop artists to approach reggaeton. They found it was a formula that worked. A Spanish song that dazzled the entire world.
I also think that beyond reggaeton, it just opened the ears to the possibility of music in Spanish in a way that hadn't been considered before.
But let's remember that it was only when Justin Bieber joined the equation with that remix that the song reached the heights that it did in the Anglo market and began breaking all the records. In truth, there are many, many more contributions that Latin music has created and added to the world. Like all those hits that paved the way for reggaeton, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. But let's be honest, who hasn't danced to Despacito with a smile? Let he who is without Despacito cast the first stone. But before Despacito, there was Gasolina. And it was the latter which first brought the sound of reggaeton to the ears of the whole world. At one point, its author, Daddy Yankee, was closer to being a star. But at one point, the star of both songs was closer to being a star on the baseball diamond than he was to being one on the microphone. had it not been for a fateful and honestly violent event in our native Puerto Rico. Was it a coincidence or was it destiny? We'll find out in the next episode of El Flow. The second season of El Flow was written and produced by Álvaro Céspedes and Reynold Gutierrez in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network and is hosted by me, Lilia Luciano. Edited by Carmen Graterol. Fact-checking by Samedi Aguirre. Executive producers are Carmen Graterol, Rose Reed, Isaac Lee, and Lilia Luciano. Sound design by Pachi Quiñones, Hugo Mendoza, and Gonzalo Messi. Special thanks to Veronica Hernandez and Pedro Aguirre. Our executive producers at iHeart are Giselle Vances and Arlene Santana. For more My Cultura podcasts, listen to the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.